Welcome to Journey into Excellence. My name is Vernon Bohr, and I'll be your host for the next 90 minutes. Journey into Excellence is an ongoing series where experts in their field focus on how evidence-based promotion of liberty and happiness pursuit requires clear thinking and civility in our family, education, and leadership management systems. Each of our expert panelists brings something unique to discussion. Our panelists include Jack Malcolm, the president of Falcon Performance Group, an organization dedicated to improving the professionalism, preparation, and productivity of sales professionals in the complex sale. Did I read that right? Martin Haysacker, a professor of psychology at the University of Florida. Brian P. Higley, Ph.D. Dr. Higley is president of and CEO of the Building Blocks to Excellence, LLC, a company that focuses on promoting team excellence, personal effectiveness, and work-life satisfaction in individuals, teams, and organizations. And Mal Hyman, he's not here yet, but hopefully he'll show. Mal has a master's degree in sociology and is an associate professor of sociology at Corker University in Hartsville, South Carolina. And with that, I turn it over to Dr. Higley to give us an overview of what today's show is going to be about.
Sounds great. Thanks, Vern. And just to make sure, I might have tuned out, but I'm not sure if we introduced Dr. Martin Haysacker. In case we didn't, I'll just let everybody know that he's a professor and former chair of psychology at the University of Florida. He's also the former president of Division 17 of the American Psychological Association. He served as chair at the University of Florida's Department of Psychology, as well as numerous other boards and committees, and is a highly published author in many scientific journals. So forgive me if I blanked out and I was just redundant, but I wanted to make sure we introduced Dr. Haysacker as well. So what I normally do is start these sessions off with a little review of where we've been and then a preview of where we're going, and I don't see why we should stop that now. So what we did in our first year together in Journey into Excellence is we took a journey into a definition of what it means to be excellent, and I think the sort of shorthand version of what we came to was that excellence equals civility and clear thinking. And we spent about a year on these podcasts, the first eight podcasts, I think, going through what it means to have civility and clear thinking by using what we call the power and control wheel versus the equality wheel. So we defined excellence as moving away from using economic abuse, which is a power control strategy, and toward economic partnership, which is an equality wheel strategy. Excellence as moving away from using coercion and threats and toward more negotiation and fairness. Excellence as moving away from intimidation and toward non-threatening behavior. Moving away from emotional abuse and toward respect. Moving away from using isolation and toward more trust and support. Moving away from minimizing, denying, blaming, and distorting reality and toward being honest and accountable. Away from using the less powerful and toward being more responsible in our leadership. And then moving away from using power privilege and moving toward sharing power and sharing responsibility. So we thought that that was a pretty good definition of what it means to have clear thinking and civility and to be excellent. And then this year we've been moving from the definition and into, I think, a super critical question, especially given what's been happening lately, and that is if equality wheel learning, living, and leading is so good and so excellent, why is it that it seems that so many of us struggle to do that? And the answer we're exploring this year on the podcast is because it takes a truly heroic journey to move away from the power and control strategies and tactics and toward the equality wheel strategies and tactics. And so we've been talking about this heroic journey through the lens of Joseph Campbell's work, The Hero's Journey, also known as the Monomyth. which is separated out into three different phases. Phase one is separation. That's where you move away, for the purposes of this podcast anyway, from the power and control strategy and tactics. The second phase is initiation, where you move toward more equality wheel strategy and tactics. And then the third phase is return, where after you become an expert at the equality wheel, then you actually try to spread that to more and more places. And for the purposes of this podcast, we've been talking about excellence within three systems. So you try to spread equality wheel learning, living, and leading in family systems, in education systems, and in leadership systems. So we started off in the separation phase, which consists of four different steps: call to adventure, refusal of call, unexpected aid, and crossing the first threshold. And really, those four steps are all about how to move away from old ways of doing things in order to prepare yourself to move towards new ways of doing things. And that's the initiation phase. And we talked a little bit in previous podcasts about some of the literature on expert initiation, initiating yourself into something so that you become an expert. And some of that literature states that in order to do the initiation phase, you need to be thinking in terms of around 10 years and around 10,000 hours working with other experts in highly focused ways and being really open to constructive criticism and strengthening your weaknesses. The different steps in the initiation phase, phase two of the monomyth or the hero's journey: belly of the whale, road of trials, meeting with the nurturer, temptation, facing fear, dying to old ways of doing things, the ultimate boon, and then dealing with refusal of return. And we covered those in previous podcasts. I don't want to get too much into those, but basically those are just different steps that have to do with initiating yourself into, again, for the purposes of this podcast, more equality wheel strategies and tactics. And so that's where we've been. Where we're going today is actually into the return phase of the monomyth or the hero's journey, the third phase, with the first two being separation and initiation. And step one is sometimes referred to as magic flight. And basically with that, the way I think about that is after you get to this ultimate boon, which is basically what you go on your hero's journey for, and for the purposes of this podcast, I think it's to become an expert at clear thinking and civility, then there are different kinds of forces that might hold you back from sharing that ultimate boon with other people. And that's what I think magic flight is about, at least from my perspective. And then the next step today we're going to cover in the return phase is referred to as rescue from without. And basically what I think about when I think about this phase is people who or forces that help us to share the ultimate boon with more and more people, even in the face of certain kinds of forces that might influence us to not want to share civility and clear thinking with other people. So with that, I thought I'd toss it on over to Marty to see if he has anything he wants to say about magic flight and rescue from without, which has to do with moving from the initiation phase of the hero's journey to the return phase, where you start to share the ultimate boon, which is, for the purposes of this podcast, promoting more clear thinking and promoting more civility. Marty, take it away. Did I put you to sleep, Marty?
You did not put me to sleep, but
okay.
I had the blowers in the neighborhood caused me to silence, and then I forgot to unsilence. Yeah, rookie mistake. Okay, so what we're now thinking about is magic flight with families. So the notion is that you have to escape with the boon. And that can be just as challenging and hard as other phases. So imagine we're a family that has reached a sort of a really great place where we treat each other with respect and dignity and equality, where we work through challenges and conflicts in equitable, peaceful ways that are regardful to each other. And we've coveted that. We want to. We're afraid of losing that magic moment. But in some or many or maybe even most family members, there's a restlessness. And by the way, I'm speaking hypothetically because in my family, we're still very much in the initiation phase. It's a work in progress. We're getting close. But for these families that are high functioning, that I look upon with great admiration, I think there comes a moment where they realize we can't keep this wonderful stuff just with us. What we have to do is share this, and so that means return to the world. An example of this might be a family that has really found itself in wonderful shape, and yet it's not enough. It's not fulfilling. And so one member maybe reaches out to pull in another person. So there's an old movie called The Blind Side, where an affluent, white, upper-middle-class Southern family has it all sort of going on. Everything's wonderful. And the mother in the family sees a need for a young man who is a football player. This is a white family. He's a black football player. They're pretty scholarly. He's pretty athletically focused. He comes from a family that's got a lot of fraughtness in a very difficult neighborhood, and they come from, you know, one of those super, you know, ultra suburbia places, and yet you can tell she's restless. She has it all, but having it all is not enough. And I think her colleaguing of this young man, not trying to replace his mother, just trying to fulfill a need, may be an example of a family doing magic flight. And initially, the rest of the family isn't all that into it. And again, I'm speaking as an outsider to this process. But I have seen families, and in fact, in my own childhood, there was a family named the McDuffs, and they were this family. And yet there was a point, and I still to this day, every time one of them, I read anything about them on Facebook, or the mother just passed recently, and it just was almost like, you know, a cut to my heart. I was one of these people that was the result of their magic flight. They had a wonderful, wonderful family and a good extensive family. And then there were these sort of broken, wayward little people of whom I was one, to be honest, when I was 12, 13, 14, getting in trouble and, you know, driving my car too fast and, you know, all that. And yet the McDuffs welcomed me as if I were their own child. Stay as long as you want, eat as much as you want. And I think that was their they had transitioned out of protecting their perfect little family and into magic flight. And that's blessedly how I gained a foothold in this loving world that I really needed, because I was living alone with my dad, who was sort of angry and, you know, had his own wounds and so forth. So those are my thoughts about family and magic flight, The Blind Side and the McDuffs.
So, Marty, as you were talking, it brought me back to my own upbringing. You brought up the blind side, where a white family reached out to a black individual. And in my own history, I actually had the opposite. I was at a certain time, I was living with my father and stepmother with four other kids. So that a lot going on, put it that way. And there wasn't a lot of available attention for all five of the kids, as is so often in some of these larger families. And I was lucky enough to meet a family, the Cosby family. My best friend was George Cosby, African-American family. I was around 12 or 13, interestingly enough. And they reached out to me, and I started playing basketball with their son. And I think I had a very similar sort of experience with the Cosby family, and I thought I'd share that with you, because that's kind of the reverse of the movie, where you've got a white family reaching out to an African-American kid. In my life, I actually had an African-American family reach out to me, a white kid. So thanks for bringing that nice memory up.
And I love that. And it's not about race. It's about the loving quality of the family. You're totally right.
Right.
So I only talked about Magic Flight. Do you want me to also talk about Rescue from Without, or might it be better to just we do Magic Flight and then we come back to Rescue from Without?
I'll ask Jack that. Jack, do you think we should do Magic Flight and have you talk a little bit about it, or should we have Marty take the next step and talk a little bit about Rescue from Without, and then we'll just kind of play off of what he's talking about? Any thoughts?
In order to answer that, I just need to say I have to confess a little bit of ignorance, because I'm not sure, and maybe people listening are may not be sure either. So what exactly does Magic Flight entail? What does that mean? Can you clarify that?
Sure. I got it right here. So do you want to paraphrase it, or do you want me to read it from the David Jolly graph?
I'd love you to paraphrase it. What does it mean to you? I think that would probably be easier to understand.
So what it means to me, and I can use the McDuffs as an example, what it means to me is, like, the first couple of times the McDuffs welcomed in, you know, me and my ilk of sort of scruffy, slightly wrong side of the tracks, wayward kids, I know it had a disruptive impact on them, and I can only guess that they sought input from other people, from guides who could help them say, how do we reach out to the Martys of the world and yet not disrupt our family? How do we include them while staying true to the really, really good work that we've done? So in other words, so the Rescue from Without, and Brian, I'd love to hear your insight on this, and Vern, you as well, but Rescue from Without is sort of like, I need a guide about how to do the reentry. What it reminds me of is when the spacecraft back in the day were entering the atmosphere from a space voyage, they had this very dangerous period where they're entering the atmosphere, there's a heat shield, tremendous heat is produced, and something has to protect the astronauts from getting burnt up. And it feels like Rescue from Without is sort of a guide who creates the insulation from the friction of reentering the world.
And to piggyback on that, Jack, this is something that we've talked about before. Sometimes when I think of the Magic Flight and the ultimate boon, especially the ultimate boon the way we're talking about it, which is excellence as clear thinking and civility, I think about the work that's pretty similar to what Marty and I are doing together as well, and that is the work of Jonathan Haidt in education.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've talked about the coddling of the American mind and some of the other things that he's come up with, and Marty and I are doing some similar work in that sort of realm. And one of the things that I think can happen once one becomes sort of committed to clear thinking and to civility, similar to what Jonathan Haidt has expressed and what Marty and I have written about and talked about for years, there can be some kind of a force, and I guess I'll name three forces that I think are related to this. This gets back to what we talked about in our discussion of the temptation step in the initiation phase. I think about it, these forces, as the acronym MEH, M-E-H. The first is materialism. The M in MEH is materialism. The E in MEH is egoism. And the H in MEH is hedonism. And I think these are forces that can sometimes make it difficult for us to go and share boons like civility and clear thinking, because I think sometimes people can wonder, well, should I promote civility and clear thinking, or will that hurt me financially? That's the materialism sort of force that might make you want to just kind of shut up about this, especially if most people are being uncivil, or if they're not, they don't seem to be clear thinking, and you know, well, if I do bring up something about clear thinking and civility, I might get punished by this group, including they might not hire me, or they might fire me, or whatever. That's something that I think Jonathan Haidt has talked quite a bit about, and Marty and I have written about and talked about as well. What are we going to do if we're in education systems where we think civility or clear thinking isn't reigning supreme? Are we going to share that with people, even if it might hurt us materialistically? Egoism, I think, is the same thing. So I guess I'll just keep using the education system because that's what I usually represent in these podcasts. It's possible that if we're in an education system where civility and clear thinking isn't the highest priority, or doesn't appear to be at least, then it's possible if you do try to share that stuff in that system, then you can take some blows to your ego. It might be that fewer people appreciate you or fewer people nominate you for Teacher of the Year. And then finally, hedonism.
Teacher evaluations.
Yeah, those kinds of things. And that's something Jonathan Haidt actually, Marty, you might remember you and I looked at one of, we're watching a video of Haidt that said, I was presenting some science. A student said I was being racist or sexist or something. I forget exactly what the ism was. And he said, I just said I'm sorry, and I didn't sort of state the case that, wait a minute, that's not sexism or racism. This is a psychological or a scientific finding. And then hedonism related to that is that sometimes if you're in an education system or a family system or a leadership system, and clear thinking and civility isn't valued, then it can actually not only not be pleasurable to promote this, but it can actually be painful. So those are the three forces that I think about, both in terms of the temptation to not get to the ultimate boon, and also the three forces that I think require people to get some kind of magical flight so that these three forces of materialism, egoism, and hedonism don't convince you to just shut up about clear thinking and civility, even if you're in a family system, education system, or a leadership system where you know this might not be so good for my material life, my ego, or for hedonism either. Don't know if that's
so.
Right, but
is magic flight about transcending these lower order drivers? I call them lower order. I don't know if that's correct, but I'm kind of thinking of Maslow. I see materialism and hedonism as the, what's the term in Maslow? It's not safety, but
physiological.
I'm sorry.
The physiological needs.
Yeah, I guess you could call that the physiological needs, and then of course the egoism would be the esteem needs.
Esteem. You got it. Yep.
But none of these really speak to either self-actualization or transcendence. And I'm looking back at something that Marty said, I wrote down, having it all is not enough. And you see people in life that go through their whole lives trying to pursue materialism, egoism, and hedonism, and they get there and they're on top of the mountain and they go, is this it? Is this what I've worked my life for? Which is why I think you see people like a great article this morning about Bill Gates and all the work he's doing for vaccines in the world. And, you know, it started out when they got sued for antitrust, he finally realized I better start doing something to make myself look good. So I guess that was egoism, but then it turned into it took him over. And he started doing it for the right reasons and not just the egoism reasons.
And it's ironically, I think that sort of threat could be considered part of this magic flight, as funny as it can sound. So I imagine if that's true, I don't know enough about that part of Gates' life to be even close to an expert on it. But let's just say that is what his motivations initially were. I can see that fitting into the magic flight. He's got this boon. He's not going to share it unless there's some kind of threat. So the threat pushes him to share it for his ego. And again, I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying it for the sake of argument.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's the exact reason, but that was certainly one of the things that at least triggered a lot of the work that he started doing.
And maybe that's part of the magic flight. If you can get over your ego and then say, wow, this is really a sort of transcendent thing. This is something that I really actually enjoy more than my ego. I think that could actually be considered a magic flight sort of mechanism.
Yeah,
I think a
movie or something, and I can't think of one off the top of my head where somebody maybe is forced to do community service and through it discovers the other side of life and discovers a reason for doing what they want to do, what they were forced to do initially.
I love it.
Mel?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I can, yes.
Good. I wasn't sure if the connection was there. Yeah, I had an interesting experience I wanted to share with students. I set up a chance for them to tutor in a low-income community.
And I think they just never thought about doing something like that until the class was offered. And once the situation arose, I think a lot of them grew into it. And, of course, the learning went both ways. And a lot of them got closer to me. Discussions were good in the class. And I think they just needed a secure nudge to get outside of their comfort zone to try something that was different. And I think they grew bolder from it and started asking different questions. And I just wanted to share that maybe from a secure position, even in a classroom, that extra nudge, along with a support group to talk about it, seemed to maybe help with their initiation.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, can I?
Yes.
I want to share something with you. I think one of the things that strikes me is that things live for us as human beings, both intellectually and viscerally. And when you return it back to the world and share it, it starts to live for you viscerally. There's something about, there's an old saying, is things have you or you have them. And if you try and hang on too tightly for those things you've discovered that excite you and don't take them back into the world, they tend to live intellectually without the juice, so to speak. And I was thinking with respect to this whole series of ours of the power and control wheel versus the other wheel, is there's, you can accomplish things in either with power and force or with a certain flow in life. And I don't tend to be someone that likes a lot of jargon. But when things flow, you're a businessman, right? And you know when you're in that zone dealing with people, and when you take the techniques or whatever it is you've learned or discovered in life in terms of business management and can bring it back to the world, it both lives for you and it empowers those with whom you deal. And that's kind of how I see this. You know, I used to play a lot of video games, both multiplayer online games and stuff, and, you know, local computer games. And there's something when you're interacting with other people that gives you a dynamic that's not there when you're, and it's not that what you get for yourself and by yourself and the enjoyment and pleasure you get out of things by yourself, it's not that they're not important or rewarding, but there's a richness that's brought to your life, or anyway, my life, that's all I can tell you, when I take it out in the world. And that's the essence, in part, that I get out of this discussion right now. I get that essence out of what Mal shared. You know, there's something about when you get your students out there and they start tutoring and seeing that they make a difference in their ability to empower other students when they tutor them. You know, I hear that in Mari's experience and stuff. And so somehow you can get, for me, it's kind of like, and then I'll leave it with this. It's like this intellectual knowledge. I remember learning to ride a bicycle and my father would tell me over and over and over what to do. And you have this understanding of the balance, but it's never the same as when you, that instant that you achieve that first point of balance on the bike. And it might only be 5 feet, it might be 10 feet or something. And at that point, something shifts in your relationship to what you know intellectually, to a visceral thing, and you have something to strive for. And that's what I see taking it back out into the world is being for me. That's all I had to say.
Well, it's like the difference between knowing something and feeling something.
Yeah. And a lot of life I can't talk about you guys. You guys are superior to me. But in my life, there's a lot of stuff that I've known my whole life. And all of a sudden, boom, that's how I've come to define an epiphany, is something I've known my whole life intellectually that all of a sudden just gotten kicked in the gut viscerally, like, wow, I got that. I really there's a transition there that transcends that. I know that. I know that. As
you're talking, that's worth a lot to me, Vern, because as you're talking, I'm thinking again of another scientific psychologist who we've mentioned quite a few times in our show, the work of Carl Rogers, who was really big on what to me is the essence of the equality wheel. I've talked about this a few times. I call it the GREs, genuineness, regard, and empathy. And he was really big both in terms of, I guess you could consider psychotherapy as a sort of a family system kind of a thing. So maybe Marty can speak about this. But he also took genuineness, regard, and empathy into the classroom. And one of the things that he wrote about that I really, I think I knew for a while and then through experience got a series of epiphanies, as you call them, Vern, as I actually was trying to do my best to promote genuine regard and empathy or the equality wheel in the classroom. And that is that the most important thing that we can learn, according to Rogers, and I think I'm with him right now, at least currently, is to be genuine, regardful, and empathic, both toward ourselves and as many people as possible, as often as possible, with an understanding that no one's perfect. And he said this most important learning cannot be taught. It simply must be experienced, which brings me back to, I think I mentioned this actually when we were going over meeting with the nurturer, this idea that you can read about genuine regard and empathy, you can know these things, but what Rogers found in his actual work is that you don't get it until you actually experience genuine regard and empathy, first off in the presence of somebody else who's an expert at that, and then after you get a sense of what it's like to interact with somebody with those attitudes, to experience yourself as somebody who is that. So when you were bringing up those epiphanies and the difference between, I think Jack said, knowing and feeling, I think knowing and experiencing is pretty similar to that, especially with regard to clear thinking and civility. I think of a lot of Roger's work, especially his thought about the most important thing people can learn in families, education, and leadership systems, and how this most important thing cannot be taught. It must be experienced.
Don't all speak at once.
I think it's the first time we've been lost for words in 2 years.
Brian, you are right on, and I don't know if my whole going off on some tangent like that made any sense, Jack. But I think about in business, you can force people to do things. I mean, and that's been the whole story of history in many respects. But by the same token, when out of your interactions with people, they of their own volition work with you, and they're your business. You know, if you're a leadership in business, or you know, a CEO or something, when you have employees that willingly work for the company and the good of the company and everything going on, see, that's what all this is about for me. Is that on the one hand, we've got wonderful models to deal with, but how can I take it out and make it work in the world? And we start with a model that illuminates the world for me and gives me some insight into how the world works and allows me to take a look at and see what do I want to bring to the world and how do I want to approach the world out of how it works for me. And there's something about force produces certain types of results, but it's also a lot of work to force people to do stuff. And when you can share what it's like to be partners, so to speak, in life, which happens when you realize that you and I and all of us are in this sort of an interaction and game together. It's a dynamic that you can't duplicate merely on your own. It's not that you can't enjoy being by yourself and all this. So These are the things I see us as striving for, and I hear it in Mal's share. You know, I've done a lot of tutoring in life. I've led course, and there's something out of seeing other faces light up because you bring something to their lives that in return you get a lot back for. And so I just wanted to kind of share, I wanted to emote here for a second with Jack, because that seemed to me appropriate.
Can you still hear me?
One of the things that occurs to me, Vern, that as you were talking, just a sentence occurred to me, is that it's not heroic if you're not sharing it with someone else. And I think that's really at the core of Campbell's model, which is if you don't return this ultimate boon to somebody else, you have not completed the heroic quest.
Jack, yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to pick up. I had you on speaker. I had to pick up because my dog is going crazy. So, I think you said something very important there, Brian. Is if it's not helping somebody else, can it really be called heroic?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, that
and
what
is jump
in.
Go ahead. Now, go.
Just to play off of what Brian was saying, in my reading of the late Martin Luther King, in his writings in 67 and 68, he tries to come back to there is an injustice if you see injustice and walk away from it, that you're harming yourself as well as your community. And I think it's part of the genuineness, empathy, and regardfulness that we get in the habit of trying to confront injustice. And he was trying to bring this out and then train people for civil disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I think as a teacher, you don't so much teach as set up experiences for them to teach themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the richest is service learning or travel, but it could take a number of forms. And I think King was leading toward this with trying to create at least the sense of speaking truth to power with love by not looking away from injustice. Underlying it, you need to help others to help yourself, to put it in Socratic terms.
Marty, were you going to say something?
No. I loved what was just said, but I didn't have anything I was going to jump in on. I'm going to.
I know you well enough to know that that first answer wasn't true.
Yeah, it's scary when you know somebody well enough who knows that you're about to say something when you didn't know you were about to say it. So this conversation among us has helped me understand the monomyth the Joseph Campbell's hero's journey a little bit more deeply, which is that the ultimate boon may actually be sort of illusory in its ultimateness, it may be really the penultimate boon. In other words, it's this thing where you experience the victory, the aha, you've run across the finish line on the marathon, you've gotten the big promotion, the whatever, only to learn that the real work is a couple of steps later. And of course, it goes ultimate boon, refusal of return, magic flight. So ultimate boon, I did it, I want it. And then it's like, maybe that's not all. And you're like, no, it's all.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, we're done. It's all. And then, I don't think so. And so it may be that the real transformative work, as Mal was kind of mentioning, is the next step, the magic flight step, and this was basically the point. If you can't return benefit to the community from the experiences that you've enjoyed, then what have you done? And so the return may actually be that the deepest of the phases, because it now went from what I did to sort of fertilizing, reinvesting for the good of all.
Well, to sort of tie in what everyone is saying, at least from my perspective, I want to go back to something that I think I talked about when we first got into the hero's journey, and that is how George Lucas used the hero's journey to create the first three Star Wars films, the fourth, fifth, and sixth episode, but the first three that were actually developed. And the return phase was embodied by Return of the Jedi, where Luke Skywalker uses all his training from the wise Yoda to go and fight the evil empire. And I think one of the reasons
why... Nothing subtle about that title.
That's right. but one of the things that I think that first trilogy gets across, at least to me, is what I think Jack and Mal and Marty just said, and that is, just imagine if the whole trilogy ended after Luke Skywalker learned to be a really great Jedi and then he didn't do anything with it. And I don't think there would be very many people who would think that that would be a very satisfying end to the trilogy. So I think the ideas that you all are getting across, I think Lucas tried to get across in Return of the Jedi, where this incredible force of nature, Jedi Knight, actually did something with all of his training, because if you don't do something for other people, then what's the use?
You know, Brian, I want to throw something else in here that has struck me, and you all know it, being in professional fields, is that every one of us in one way or another tends to hear things slightly differently and see things slightly differently. And given we live on a planet of 7 billion people, one of the things I found very powerful when you go to share whatever it is that you discovered that was of value to you is you start to get adept at expressing yourself in a multitude of different ways in such a way that you can communicate effectively to a wide variety of people. Not all everyone will hear whatever the message there is to communicate in the same way, even though you're fundamentally saying the same thing, the same essence. And I've thought in aftermath of my education, many years later, I thought, wow, if they'd only said it that way, as things that I didn't understand in my younger days when I was in college, only to think is, well, you know, the more I think about it, I think maybe they did, and I just didn't get it.
I'm thinking of a metaphor as you're talking about that, Vern, of if the hero's journey is a wheel, when you get to the magic flight, you're like your cog is interacting with other wheels, which are at different stages in their journey.
Mm.
Therefore,
I love that.
They're going to see things differently depending on where they are in their journey.
Yes.
Yeah, and it also adds to your journey because the cogs are interrelated.
Yeah.
And where they are on their journey can be disruptive of and of your journey and kind of frightening,
right?
Yeah,
which
cool.
brings
I love
back
that. That's
to
really,
my mind.
Really good.
What you just said, Marty, reminds me of the road of trials, which means you can the sort of series, as we talked about in earlier podcasts, of these challenges that once you understand what the challenges are for, you come to realize, oh, these challenges aren't annoyances. These challenges are there to help me to become even better and better initiated into the ultimate boon, which for the purposes of this discussion is more civility, more clear thinking. So I think back to a little bit of what Mal was talking about in terms of students and what students can do. And I think, and then, you know, not just students, but I mean, just people in general. You can get to a place where you think, well, I'm an expert at this, that, or the other thing. I'm a business expert, education expert, or a family expert. But then there always will be somebody who comes along with some kind of new challenge, some kind of addition to your road of trials that might make you realize, well, I didn't know exactly how to deal with everything. This person's giving me another road of trials. This is a especially quote-unquote difficult child or student or employee, but I think once you get to that ultimate boon of clearly thinking about the things that we're talking about and being civil, I think you start to realize, oh boy, the so-called difficult people are just these wonderful challenges to keep me on my toes and to keep me humble and to keep me learning.
Ryan,
I'll give you an amen on that one. And I'll give Ryan credit on guiding me a bit in thinking about the hero's journey. I'm teaching a class on politics and film, and he said, you know, Hunger Games, you could use, as with Star Wars, and I didn't have any preconceptions. I thought I'm just going to show these films and see where the discussion goes. And for what it's worth, a lot of them had not seen Roots before. They were absolutely appalled. We had a great discussion afterward. I didn't give them any lecture. I just set it up a little bit. And same thing with Hunger Games. With Schindler's List, I brought in a rabbi, and they were, feeling and thinking enough that they were open, and it brought out a certain genuineness and empathy and regard for others, and we just talked about it. And I can't quantify through any traditional means how well I did in class, but I'll say it's one of the few classes where I had a number of students stick around afterward and walk with me and continue talking about things. And all I did is recognize the power of some good movies for unlocking a discussion on genuineness and empathy. And I appreciate Brian's insights on that.
Mal, you've mentioned a few times something that, again, brings me back to one of the masters, at least in my mind, of genuine regard and empathy, Carl Rogers. The first time today when you discussed setting up experiences, not necessarily lecturing, I got to a quote here that I absolutely love, but I didn't get a chance to insert it. But now that you've mentioned this a second time, I get the chance. One of my favorite quotes about the facilitation of learning is from Carl Rogers, and it goes like this. The only learning which significantly influences behavior is self-discovered, self-appropriated learning. And that's the quote that I thought of both times that you, the previous two times that you talked in today's show.
Well, I like that a lot. And I need to borrow it and share it with others and read more Carl Rogers. There's no question about it. I keep bumping up into similar observations on it. Can't wait to teach the class on politics and film again. We were able to race through material, and I don't exactly understand the magic of how it occurred, but they were certainly ready for a vivid short dialogue afterward, and I think it's reflected in, you know, the trust that I built up with the students, and I don't know where to go from here on it, but it did seem really effective. And I think that's the basis. If I could meander one more quick observation, I guess I intuitively have thought this for a while. And when I brought my 16-year-old daughter to Nicaragua to live in a rural area, she picked up everything. I didn't have to talk about problems of economic development. She saw it, and we talked some on the flight home. She had a much better set of questions, and she understood it at a visceral level. And it's not because I'm a gifted communicator or teacher. I just knew I wanted her to experience it, and she went from there, which, again, follows, I guess, Rogers, and I did it inadvertently.
Well, Rogers makes me think it might, speaking of Rogers, makes me think it might be a good time to transition from the magic flight to rescue from without, because rescue from without is about different guides or assistants or people who can help us to cross that threshold from simply training or learning about this stuff to actually returning and sharing it with other people. Do you all feel ready to move to rescue from without in terms of these assistants or these people that can help us to start sharing our ultimate or penultimate boons?
Yep. Sure.
Sounds good.
Marty, you want to take us away in the family system?
So I was trying to draw a parallel with players that are critical in the initiation phase to achieving the ultimate boon. And what I was thinking of was meeting with the – you don't say goddess. You have a different phrase. Meeting with the
– nurturer. Nurturer, speaking of Rogers. Nurturer. I say nurturer. The person who really is genuine disregard and empathy, who is civility and clear thinking.
Yeah, so what I was going to say is it may be that the meeting with the nurturer in the initiation phase is really critical to achieving the ultimate boon. And in the same way, the rescue from without represents that to really come back to the earth world or the original world. You need another nurturer. You need another guide. And so, as I mentioned to you before, I had this fantasy that Mary and Buddy McDuff were maybe they spoke with their parish priest, or maybe they spoke with other folks as their sort of beautiful intact little Roman Catholic family was then opened up, and in it came. You know, crazy people like me and several other scruffy young people. And I don't know that story. This is my fantasy about what happened with them, and they're now both gone, so I can't even ask them. But my guess is that they reached out to family members or to their parish priest or to other trusted people about how to navigate this sort of widening of their family with both. It was compelling to sort of give their love away, kind of as Mal was talking about, but also upsetting and disruptive. And I don't know who that was. And I was trying to think I was trying to think through the plot of The Blind Side about whether the Tuohys, the mom and dad, and I haven't read the book. If I had, I bet it would detail this. Sort of reached out to other people about sort of how to guide them about how to do what they're doing in a way that's effective. And there were actually scenes in the movie where it was clear they had mishandled Michael and that he had resentments, which probably reflected that they probably needed a little more guidance than they got in order to do this. So my general sense is, and the reason I have to rely on movies and other people, as I said before, is, you know, my family and I are not, we're not, we haven't reached the ultimate boon. We're still on the journey. So I'm drawing on the experiences of other people. But I know in many, many other families, they have this experience where they take in, for example, a foreign exchange student, and then they need addition of that person in the family creates a disruption or an upset or a whatever. And so what do? They reach out to other people who've taken in, students like that, or they talk to the agency that sponsors it and so forth and so on. So the point is that the rescue from without is this opportunity to get more nurturance and probably surprise that you need it, surprise that having achieved the ultimate boon, you now are able to still get wounded, still get hurt, still get things can still get monkeyed up in your return back to the planet in the same way that I think of that, like Apollo space capsule having a tremendous amount of friction as it reenters the atmosphere and finally returns to Earth.
You know, as you were talking, Marty, it occurred to me, I'll move it from family to the education system, but I can think about it in other systems as well. But one of the things that Mal had earlier today honored me with some praise, and so I'll just give it back to all of you all. One of the roles that I think everybody on this podcast has played for me reminds me of rescue from without. So I think all of you, if not all of you know that I have had quite a few roads of trials as I've tried to do my best to become an expert or at least more expert at clear thinking and civility and then promote it in as many systems as possible with different kinds of success and in some cases apparent failure. I don't know if what I've done that looked like a failure might have turned into a success later. But as I've confronted certain apparent failures to think critically or to act civilly in myself and others across time, you all have been sort of rescuers from without as I've either gone over some of your work or popped into your office or read an online article or two that you've written or seen something that you might have posted on a social media site. This group of people, one of the reasons why I have been so happy to have this group of people come together is because individually over the years, you all have been major support systems for me, especially when I felt like the road of trials was getting a little too hot under the collar as I've tried to initiate and return with more civility and clear thinking to the best of my ability into these different systems that I enter into. So thanks to all of you, because you all have been sources of rescue from without for many years in my life in many different ways.
Wow, high praise. I feel touched. Thank you.
Well, you're a good influence on all of us. It's mutual. This is quite a dialogue we get into. You know, the one I try to focus on in the morning that seems to move in harmony with civility and clear thinking is do justice, love mercy, walk humbly. And, you know, I think if you're going to fight for justice, you're going to end up being pretty humble.
Well, I agree with you. I've been listening to this and reflecting on a couple of things. One is I had written down the word humility as you were talking. You cannot have self-discovered learning unless you have humility. You've got to be willing to learn from somebody. And speaking of self-discovered learning, I think that the rescue from without is slightly contradictory to your Carl Rogers quote, because I agree that self-discovered learning is the best, but like nobody would have in your class, Mal, nobody would have watched Roots on their own if you had not thought about it and said, hey, this is something we need to watch. So it does help to have teachers, mentors, influencers who can point you in the right path for that self-discovered learning. And one of the things that I reflect on, and one of the reasons I really enjoy these sessions, is I don't think that I have, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that I have the same opportunity that you all do to learn from other peers. I'm not in an academic environment where I'm around a lot of people who think these thoughts and talk about these things. You know, the people that I talk to, they'll talk about, hey, how'd the Steelers do this weekend or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. It's in my world, you think, where am I going to get that learning? There's probably not another teacher out there. Is it from books? Is it from discussions with like-minded peers who think about these things and talk about these things? That, you know, sometimes you have to, I guess, find your own teacher. And that's one of the reasons I do enjoy these sessions so much.
One of the things that I thought we might talk a little bit about, because speaking of rescue from without, one of my original visions of this podcast and why I've been so thankful when Vern invited me to a podcast and when he was open to me saying, let's not just make this me and you, let's make this a panel, is that I was hoping that in some way, shape, or form, sort of related, Jack, to what you just said, for people who might be in environments that don't have as much opportunity to talk about these things, is that maybe these podcasts could be one form of rescue from without to our listeners. And one of the things that I get a lot from people who are listening and sort of following some of these things that either I talk about or that we talk about together is related to the return idea of the ultimate boon of civility and clear thinking. And so many of them feel, I guess I could say, afraid to promote civility, to promote clear thinking, to express themselves in the way that they want to during these times, because they fear what some people have come to call a sort of cancel culture. So speaking of rescue from without, I thought I might throw that out to you all and talk a little bit about what it's like for people who might be just kind of getting initiated into clear thinking, into civility. Maybe they're trying to promote it, but what they encounter is a pretty large road of trials of people who seem to have relatively negative reactions to the idea of a clearer thinker or clearer thinking or more civility. So, for example, I've had quite a few people say, look, I would like to sort of express that that maybe we should be more civil to each other, or maybe we should avoid certain kinds of logical fallacies. But whenever I bring it up, the people around me become very harsh toward me. They don't think we should be civil to our quote-unquote enemies, and they don't want to think about thinking errors like the genetic fallacy or composition division or appeal to emotion, because these are the things upon which all of their thoughts depend. And so they're not open to that, and actually they become somewhat abusive when I bring these things up. So I thought in the sort of tradition of maybe being rescuers from without, we might take that on in family systems and education systems and leadership systems. Anybody have any thoughts on people who want to spread clear thinking and civility, but oftentimes find abuse when they try to do it?
Yeah, get comfortable getting canceled. get comfortable getting canceled. If your life is going to be restricted or defined or blinkered or imprisoned by the fear that someone or a bunch of other people are going to say, you are no longer of interest to me, you are no longer worth listening to or being with, then maybe it's time to get comfortable getting canceled. Because otherwise, you have this avoidance learning problem where, in anticipation of a bad outcome, you engage in all kind of avoidance behavior that just restricts and restricts and restricts what you're able to do, and you live in an ever smaller, more fear-saturated world. So what I've done, and this is true in the family and it's true outside of the family, is try as much as I can, even though many things inside me are going, no, be okay with being canceled if you're being canceled for the right reason. If you're being canceled when you're engaging in love, when you're engaging in value-based behavior, when you're checking yourself with yourself and with people that you trust to tell you the truth when you're off base. This is true in the family as well. So all of us have families where family members don't speak to another family member. The dirty little secret of families is there's a lot of brokenness there. There are erasures. There are ghostings. There are subtler versions of that go on in families all the time, and maybe in most families, maybe in all families. And those are hurtful, and you know, those are the relationships and families that keep you up at night and keep you worried and looking for any little sign that maybe the ice is thawed, or what could I do, or what's my wounded pride going to do here. And so in the face of that, what I've tried to do is be okay with getting canceled, which means I can then put my ego aside a little bit. I can maybe face the reality of what was going on with that cancellation. Is there something I need to look at? Or as I look carefully, does it look like, okay, this makes sense? And also for me, civility means don't cancel anybody. It's okay that some people make that decision, but for me, the definition of civility includes keep the door open. Even when every fiber of my being says punish them, punish them, punish them, civility says, equality wheel says, keep the door open.
Go ahead. Real quick, I just want to say that sounds like a call to action in two different ways. One is maybe a call to action to cultivate courage if you're going to be somebody who might encounter a very large abusive road of trials. And then from the other side, if you have the ability to punish people, maybe it's a call to action for you yourself to become more civil so that what you might be producing for people is not an abusive road of trials.
Right. If it's Gandhi who said, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Martin. Finish that thought.
I was going to say, I think it was Gandhi who said, if the rule is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, we end up with a blind, toothless group of people.
Hmm.
Yeah, blind, toothless people that you didn't get your eye back for the eye they lost. You didn't get your teeth back for the teeth they lost. What I wanted to share are two potent and powerful seminar experiences I've had over my life. One was listening to a professional that was in the research world, and what he said was, is if you've got a controversial new theory that you want to get out there, you're never going to get it to take root or hold or get people to consider it unless you're willing to push a little bit, because, you know, there's this resistance in the world. On the other hand, push too hard, you drive people away and they shut down. And life is dynamic, not static. And we are all kind of looking, it seems to me, for the perfect formula that works all the time, when in fact part of what it takes, if there is any way, is learning to do this dance with the dynamic life, with the conversations we have. And the second incident was an incident that a man, I was doing a multiple weekend seminar, and it had homework in between. And one of the participants shared one weekend, he says, in the past, I have no patience. You'd occasionally get me to try something, maybe on occasion twice. But this week when I was doing the homework, I didn't get it the first time, and I gave it a second try, and I finally thought, did it a third, did it a fourth, and on the fifth try I realized something. What I realized is that anything that required more than one trial in life had up until this point been unavailable to me. And I don't have an answer how to do whatever this dance with life is, but I listened to Jack there, and I what it takes is practice. I've had people from time to time tell me that I do a fairly good job of articulating things, but what they never know or never notice is the number of times I've thrown stuff out there that it fell flat and it didn't work, and I go back to the drawing board if it's important to me to communicate it. And Jack, everyone has the football conversations because they're easy and safe. But what I've also found is when you're willing to get out there, and it's not with everybody. These conversations are not appropriate as starting conversations or starters with everybody. But when there are a lot of people out here that are very much dying for this kind of chat and talk. I remember being in the hotel room the 15 months I lived in the hotel after the fire, and I would often talk to the young people at the counter, 18 to 24-year-olds. And no one, the adults like you, Mal, Brian, Marty, I, aren't talking to them. And when you start to throw out little kernels like that, they're hungry for it. And so not going anyplace with this other than life is a dynamic. There's no real answer. And in the exercise of doing it, it's just like if you don't exercise, you might only be able to do one press or curl the first time. You try it. And in time, you build up some skills in this area, and some people you'll never touch. But I say the world is dying for conversations like this. As Marty says, you know, it's not safe out there, and you get a lot of pushback, maybe canceled. But none of us will ever get adept at having these conversations that are so necessary in the world, if ever, right now, unless we're willing to engage them. And like I say, I don't have the way to do that.
I hear what you're saying. I'm sure that probably there's a lot that I can be doing to foster those types of conversations, which I'm not doing.
Well, I see this discussion as honorable because we respect each other and some of its stream of consciousness. Moving to areas that we feel would be useful to share, and come back to Brian's notion of cultivating courage, because there's a lot of courage in trying to change the world because you don't win very often. And the idea is to, you know, keep hope over despair and become a little bit wiser and a little bit more loving. And I think we're always practicing teaching and counseling, just like they practice law and practice medicine. And the only way you bump up against your limits is continuing to try. and to stay in the fight. And I think in academia, there are a lot of our colleagues that are more careerists than gladiators, or people with a calling, and they stay safe in a narrow area. So it, I think it is part of the personal journey to just keep on fighting, because that's the only way you get better at it. And I'm not sure how to teach that. I think I'm getting better at it. Gandhi would have talked in terms of Satyagraha, speak truth to power with love. And at first they avoid you, and then they mock you, and then they have to fight you, and then you win. In trying to talk to a ministerial alliance about Thanksgiving that I did yesterday, I tried to strike the theme of I'm thankful for the Creator and family and friends, but also those who have tried to speak truth to power with love. And since it was an African-American audience, I brought up Martin Luther King trying to do that. And, of course, his mentor was Gandhi. So that would be fair for us to circle back to Gandhi. And I'd never gone there with my discussion. It was nice to have a chance to share with them. And I moved through the later King, where he becomes a global citizen. And he talks about a threat to justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We're all caught in an inescapable web of mutuality, a single garment of destiny. So I found myself moving in different directions, just trying to be open to where people were at. And I think I got there. They were listening to me. They weren't expecting that. And it gave me a chance to share it on, a Thanksgiving Day service. And, I'm just kind of, as Gandhi would say, experiments in democracy.
Mal, as you were talking, I was thinking of another member of my Rescue from Without team, and that's Joseph Campbell. And I thought I'd share a story here about that cultivation of courage, something that really was an aha moment for me, speaking of insights like Vern likes to talk about. Campbell was being interviewed by, I think it was Bill Moyers. Moyers and Campbell, this is another thing that I would recommend for people who are having fears of being canceled, is check out the, I think it's like 12-hour interview between Bill Moyers and Joseph Campbell. But I think it was on that interview where Moyers said, okay, they're thinking about the Star Wars trilogy as sort of a way in which to get the hero's journey across. And Moyers said, well, of course, the role of the Jedi is to defeat the Empire. And Campbell said, no. And Moyers said, what are you talking about? And he said, the role of the Empire is as the anvil that forges the Jedi Knight. And that really helped to get across to me this idea of the importance of really leaning into the road of trials, this anvil that will pound you and maybe cancel you from time to time, as being part of your initiation into this higher level being of, for the purposes of our podcast, of more clear thinking and more civility. So one of the things that I try to do as well as I can, probably can't do it as well as Campbell did it for me, is to help people to reframe this idea of road of trials, including possible multiple cancellations, as the anvil that will help forge you into the person that you need to be. So you stop fearing these things and instead start really actually embracing them.
Jack.
Well put.
Jack, this is for you. All those words I said can be encapsulated in their essence, in my opinion, in the Teddy Roosevelt piece, The Man in the Arena.
Right. Well, and the whole idea of the anvil is really a cornerstone of Stoic philosophy, is that the things that happen to you are tests that
that make you who you are or reveal who you are and help you to grow based on how you face up to them.
And that brings me to another. Oh, go ahead, Marty.
Yeah.
I don't know why this jumped to my mind, but it's about the third or fourth time it has. My now 99-year-old dad, and every time he has said this throughout my life, I think we both spontaneously bust out into laughter. What he'll say is, you can't win them all, but you can lose them.
And I think what that did, and the first time I heard it, I was literally a little kid. And it was funny then. If you could say it tomorrow, it'll be funny tomorrow. But what it did was it sort of right-sized my expectations. And it gave me a certain degree of courage because it didn't set the survival bar at success. It set the survival bar at emerging out of failure. And so anything above that kind of felt like a lanyap, kind of like a bonus.
Yeah.
You know, Marty, as you were talking, I was thinking of yet another component of the initiation process that I know we already talked about, and that is atonement. They call it in many models atonement with the Father. I think about it as atonement with the thing that you most fear. And along with the road of trials, you know, looking at this fearsome idea of being canceled as part of the anvil that forges you, maybe it can be also part of the atonement with that which you most fear. So that maybe if you do get canceled from time to time in certain places, you can get through it and realize it wasn't quite as fearsome as you had imagined it would be. Vern, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just listening to what Marty said about his dad. Brought to mind, a friend of mine had a Jules Pfeiffer cartoon on the wall in Vietnam. You remember Jules Pfeiffer, Marty?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yep, sure do.
Short of the long, it shows a life journey of this starts off with a kid, and throughout life he gets knocked down, gets up, you know, finally it gets toward the end. He gets up more slowly this time. And the last caption always stuck with me because it shows a tombstone, and it says, I lie here pretending to be hurt. I just always...
Very nice. Very nice.
What do you all think sometimes what comes up when I talk about this sort of rescue from without idea and many of the things that we've talked about, sometimes people will ask questions about, well, what about the super vulnerable? I understand that, you know, kind of leaning into the anvil, facing that which you most fear can be helpful to people who have the tools. But what about the 8-year-old who's in an abusive family? What about the battered wife who is afraid that her husband will come and kill her or the children? What about the person who is just starting out in the field and is in the sort of crosshairs of a very fearsome person? I think about, who was that producer in Hollywood that was just causing so much abuse? Weinstein, what about these super vulnerable people who might be in the crosshairs of people who are just so powerful that they're not really ready to be molded by that hard of an anvil? Do you all have any thoughts on how we might adjust some of this talk or this advice, if you will, for people who just might be in the face of something that really is too big for them right now?
Yeah, Brian, I do. There's one of my favorite sayings in life is half-assed is still half-assed no matter which cheek you got left. And I've done a lot of seminars in my life, and I've come to the point, you know, transformational type stuff. I did a lot of the Earhart work and stuff in the past. And I tell people these days that if someone's coming at me in a parking lot with a club, a knife, or a gun, that's not the point in time I'm going to ask them if their life's working and if they'd like to go to a seminar. I'm going to deck them, take them out and do something, you know, not be half-assed, so that this is a delicate balance. And I wanted to say, I'm reading here on Wikipedia in terms of the rescue without. I'm not sure that I really understand this, because what it says is the hero may have to be brought back from his supernatural adventure by assistance from without. And it seems to me we were talking about the rescue from without being different. The Campbell's journey is an interesting one because it's outside. We're guided on the thing, and what it says here is the hero may have, as I said, may have to be brought back from his supernatural adventure by assistance from without. That is to say, the world may have to come get him. We ultimately live in a world, no matter what we discover in our hero's journey, and that fact seems to me that what he's talking about, we need to be brought back to the world. So if someone's in an abusive relationship, they need to deal with that appropriately.
You know, when you were talking, Vern, I thought of, speaking of maybe being so vulnerable that maybe you're not ready for the anvil, I actually think of a lot of what the Dalai Lama has spoken about in relation to his super anvil, at least from his perspective, the Chinese sort of invasion of Tibet. And as you were talking, I thought about some of the thinking around, well, Tibet, at least from certain people's perspectives, had a nice thing going, but they didn't do I think the Dalai Lama has even said that he didn't do enough to sort of protect the good thing that they had from possible invasion. And so one of the things that came to my mind as you were talking about how the world sometimes comes and gets you if all you do is just sort of try to hold on to what you have, the Chinese-Tibet conflict over the years came to mind, for whatever that's worth.
Don't all
but I think
once.
That really gets back into this topic for me, which is really interesting to me, is what about the super vulnerable, the people who aren't, or even maybe the countries, you know, speak of Tibet, who might not be ready for the anvils that are coming at them.
I think they need to be protected, Brian. I think that to the extent that, you know, that we're all on whatever hero's journey we are, and wherever we are in this journey of life and this battles and our adventures, we also need to be cognizant and aware of those that need to be, that we need to champion for. You know, we need to be their heroes, their warriors. And I don't mean that in an aggressive fashion, per se.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think part of what my motivation for these podcasts are is exactly that, Vern, is that I'm hoping that even if it's for one or two or three people, if they feel like the anvils of the world are legitimately just too much for them right now, that maybe as they go through the different podcasts and listen to these different ideas, maybe slowly but surely they figure out how to attain the tools or network enough with different people who might be able to help them to cross the threshold, that might be those nurturers that can help them if the road of trials gets to be too much. So really that's part of what my vision is for these podcasts, is that maybe as people who are in particularly vulnerable places think about the equality wheel, think about genuine regard and empathy, think about going to find nurturers, think about taking on smaller roads of trials until they get stronger enough to take on larger ones, that maybe in a certain way we can be part of that championing puzzle for people.
Yeah, Brian,
so, you know, until
you bring up Rogers a lot, and then I'll shut up here, Marty. The important thing to realize about Rogers, as far as I'm concerned, and Joseph Campbell and everyone, they didn't get to where we see them. Theirs was a journey as well. Carl Rogers evolved over time, I took karate, kung fu when I was in high school, and my instructor took kung fu in Taiwan, and he said that the instructors there never told him what the moves were for, because out of doing the katas, you know, doing the forms, they became so ingrained in you that at the right time, the right action was brought forth. And I, I, I think from my perspective, one of the most important things any of us can do is just dispel this myth that there's no work or effort to getting to where people are trying to get. You got to do the work. You got to engage life, and you start where you are and move forward from there, no matter where you are, should you choose to engage in the journey.
Yeah, you make me think of the expertise literature, the 10,000 hours, 10 years, and the old saying, Rome wasn't built in a day. Marty, were you going to say something?
All I was going to say is probably something you guys figured out a long time ago, but Brian, when you brought up, you know, what about the people that are really trying to handle burdens beyond them? And I was thinking, how is that relevant? And then it dawned on me as you all were talking, something I think you all probably knew intuitively and immediately, which is that maybe our magic flight has to include the protection and the aid to people whose burden is so heavy they can't bear it. Maybe that is exactly what magic flight is all about, and maybe the rescue from without is the sound of their voices calling on us to come back to the world after our ultimate boon and help them.
Which brings us back to the main aim of the podcast, the civility part of the civility and clear thinking that we've called excellence in this podcast. We need to be excellent in the form of more civility for the people who aren't quite ready for big anvils or large roads of trials.
Marty,
like
you brought to
mind that sometime in the future. I'm reminded of teaching social problems, particularly in the evening, with students that are typically from late 20s into their 50s. And when I'll ask how many have had family members or friends that have been victims of domestic violence, about three-fourths of the hands go up.
Mm-hmm.
And I quickly learned I shouldn't be doing much more than doing the introductory lecture. I need to get somebody who's a counselor in there talking with them because they're overwhelmed by it. And it is, I would submit, at least in areas of the rural South, a plague. My sense is it's more widespread than just the rural South.
Mm-hmm.
And that we need to start calling it domestic terrorism. And whatever systems have faltered to allow that to take hold, we need to be confronting in different ways. And I started asking that question 33 years ago when I was teaching at Coker, and the response is pretty similar today to where it was 33 years ago. So whatever we have done as a society or the institutions of education or the church, we haven't made much of a dent in the problem. So I'd like to see a circle back to that in one of our future discussions.
Yeah, I would too. So I know we're getting close to the end of the time. Vern, you want to wrap us up?
Yeah, well, everyone take their last shot. I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, you know, safe Thanksgiving, and let you know, all know it's been a great year so far for me. We're not done with it yet. So, Marty, why don't you start off and give us your closing comments?
My thoughts are with those people who will be spending Thanksgiving alone or who will be heartbroken because they can't spend Thanksgiving with the people that they want to be with. They can't hug them. They can't feed them turkey. They can't laugh out loud with them in their own living rooms. So as we wrap this up, my heart is heavy for all those people on this Thanksgiving.
Brian?
Yeah, so I'll keep going with the Thanksgiving theme. I'm with Marty. I wish everybody a healthy and happy Thanksgiving, and I'm with the people who are thinking about the people who can't be with the people that they love, and I'm thankful that I can be with the people that I love on Thanksgiving. And back to the sort of theme, one of the themes of the day, the rescue from without, continue to be thankful for all of you here on this panel because you've been such a big part of my rescue from without.
Mal?
Well, I'm always thankful for family and friends and for y'all for this discussion. It
clarifies thoughts for me and strengthens me. And I'm reminded at a personal level of a former mentor that now is by himself and has fallen into a fight with despair. And it's good to be in a position to invite him to family Thanksgiving. And I think it'll be a bit of a tonic. And the other, I give thanks to those who speak truth to power with love, because they're always an inspiration. And I appreciate being part of this dialogue with you guys.
Now, isn't this your first Thanksgiving without your wife?
It is.
I have that wrong. So you've
right.
Got my love, compassion, and concern. I just remembered that, so I needed to throw that out there. You know, I know that everyone else stands with you as well. Jack.
Thanks, bud. I appreciate it, and we'll we'll try to look at the notes and figure out how to cook the turkey and be resilient. And there's a lot of love around me, and there is on this phone call, and it's appreciated.
Well, I just want to let you know that I listened to you and I remembered that. I know that that was a new one in your life. And just want to let you know that someone that you've never been able to sit down face-to-face with at the Thanksgiving table here that just recently met you, you got my love, compassion, and understanding.
Thanks. Well, I feel at times like we're sharing a cup of coffee or a beer and we're talking. And, you know, the love and concern comes through. And thanks.
Maybe we'll have to do a night show sometime and I'll pop a beer.
Hey, it's 4:30 is close enough. As far as I'm concerned.
Jack.
I want to thank you, Vern, for bringing that up, because my thoughts are A, gratitude, but balanced with compassion for those who may not have as much occasion to feel gratitude this year. And I think maybe that's the balancing thing in life. You should always be grateful for what you have and strive to help others have some of the same blessings that you share.
Yeah.
Love that.
And with that, I love you all. I hope you plan on doing one more before Christmas. Brian, you got another one in mind? We're going to be able to do something for Christmas?
We'll see. I'm going to shoot out a note sometime in the next couple of weeks to see if everyone's up for it.
Well, that sounds wonderful. You all make a huge difference in my life. I thank you all for the relationship, partnership, and the podcast. Have a happy Thanksgiving. For those listening to this, all of you have a happy Thanksgiving, too. Have a happy Thanksgiving as well. We will catch you either in December or next time, whenever that may be, could be the first of the year. Signing out on Journey into Excellence for November 23rd, 2020.